Crystal would say, up until now, right, Tammy? Up until now, I have struggled with reading out loud. So I'm going to read a poem out loud to y'all. This is from Teaching with Heart. Anything that is shared tonight by way of a resource or a reference or an expert or a contact or a website, we'll drop it in the chat or I'll make a note and I'll send it out to you in email. So don't feel like you have to write any of this down. You can just sit back and listen. So this is a poem by John Daniel, and it's called A Prayer Among Friends. Among other wonders of our lives, we are alive. With one another, we walk here in the light of this unlikely world that isn't ours for long. May we spend generously the time we are given. May we enact our responsibilities as thoroughly as we enjoy our pleasures. May we see with clarity. May we seek a vision that serves all beings. May we honor the mystery surpassing our sight, and may we hold in our hands the gift of good work and bear it forth whole as we were born forth by power we praise to this one earth, this homeland of all we love. It's called A Prayer Among Friends by John Daniel. And so tonight we are among friends. And what started tonight's conversation was a webinar, a gathering by a group of people about decolonizing the reopening of schools. And I think that just in that title, there were two big words, that decolonizing and then reopening. And both are on our hearts. And so I just said, hey, anyone going to go watch this and learn from this? And do you want to debrief it? And so a few people said, yeah. And then 113 people said, yeah. So I'm going to invite you to write one thing down tonight, or consider one thing. What are you doing with the knowledge? And that was part of what was asked in the webinar, the decolonizing webinar. And so I want us each to think, what are we doing with the knowledge from tonight's gathering, and or from what we've been reading, and or from what we've been experiencing? Okay, so I don't want to do all the talking, and if it's quiet, you know, I will. So anybody want to get us started with a reflection? Or Ijuma, did you want to start off with an agreement or two before I ask for the group?
I think I just want to hold the space and make sure that we're sharing from our own experience, that we speak from the I, that we allow the silence, let that be a practice, since we are among friends, that we don't have to fill up the space with talking, that we can give people time to process, because this is very informal. And I would like us just to agree to speak from the heart. And hopefully we can hold that space and have this be a safer space for everyone.
I see the thumbs up. To me. Thumbs, I got two. And thank you, Miss Melanie. I forgot to watch the waiting room, and I'm sorry for all of you who are hanging out in the waiting room. So welcome to everyone who's joined us tonight. Ijuma was just inviting us to speak from the I, from our own experiences, and to hold space for one another and not rush to fill space with lots of talking or answers. I didn't capture the beauty of all the things she just said, but that was what my little brain heard. Hi, Misty.
You captured it.
Thank you. And so cameras on, cameras off for the last time, just because we've had 20 new people join. Cameras on, cameras off. Feel free to say hello in the chat. It is being recorded and will only be shared with the people who registered for tonight. And so tonight we're debriefing several different things. Some of you may have joined Ijuma and her colleagues the other day through the Early Childhood Investigations webinar about policing and police in our schools. Some of you may have watched Bettina Love and her colleagues around abolitionist teaching Those were links. Some of you had trouble with the links. And then many of you may have watched the decolonizing, the reopening of our schools. So I just want to open it up. And if anyone wants to share something that is rumbling around in their minds or their hearts, something, you don't have to be seeking an answer. It can just be something you're processing and wondering about. If there was a phrase from any of those resources that struck you as interesting, and then just feel free to drop it in the chat or unmute yourself, okay? So my invitation right now is if you're hesitating to share something, I'd like you to take just another heartbeat or two and notice why you're hesitating.
I will share.
Hi.
I had the privilege of getting to be a part of the Iowa group that Christy talked about that got to listen and ask questions of Ajuma and Acela a few weeks ago. And one of the things that I've been working extremely hard on is just my own knowledge, understanding, reading, listening to podcasts, really looking at a lot of the resources and things that were shared that night. And of course, then listening to all of the webinars that have been put out. And the thing that struck me actually in the decolonization webinar, because it's what I've been thinking about, and it's a thing that I know needs to happen, but I think at the very end, when Anna said, we need to abolish schools, we need to start over. And it struck me, because it's one of those things that's been in my head, but I didn't know how to get that out or how to say that, because that's all I know is what we have, but it was right. And so when she said it, it struck something for me.
Melanie, can I ask a question? Is there something in your imagination that you think could be offered for whatever the new schooling is? Is there something that your heart desires that the new schooling be?
I think so many things, right? I think the things that we heard from, there's a lot of their ideas and a lot of their offerings. And I just think a lot about how, I'm raising two teenage daughters right now, and I have one who's very good at all the stuff. She's really good at the tests and the studying and the stuff. And then I have another one who isn't. Those aren't her things. And I think, why does it have to be one way? And why aren't there all these other options of learning and the things that the hands-on things? There's just so many different things I think that could happen that hold space for all kids, no matter who they are or where they come from, that engage them at that right level. Because it's hard to watch my own kids and then all the kids I see in my job that don't get the support because they don't fit into the little box that we have of being good at the right things. I don't even know if I'm making sense, Ajuma.
You are. Go ahead.
But I don't know that I have a vision, but I definitely, I think about my daughter's high school and just the things that we all could be doing differently to engage all kids and just for them all to have a place to feel what they need to feel.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe it's like making space for various ways of knowing, various ways of learning, and various ways of being that we not even think outside the box, that we eliminate the box and that we find a different configuration to be in for our learning, and focus on that and figure out how together we can make those changes. Like that's what comes up for me when I think about what you just said. Does that kind of capture it?
Yes, absolutely.
So you have the answers. And that's what we need. We need that imagination. Because our heart is telling us what we need. Thank you, Melanie. Anyone else?
I'll mention something.
Sure.
Kind of piggybacking off of that, after sitting in on another webinar yesterday about special education, and then listening again to the decolonization webinar, and thinking in terms of how Anna talked a lot about, like, that the kids knew what they needed, and creativity, mm-hmm. and the arts and the sciences, and then thinking about the special ed piece of things I was hearing yesterday. And it, for me, it kind of feels like I keep coming back to, if we were really using more developmentally appropriate practices and universal design for learning kinds of concepts, like restarting school whenever we restart, mm-hmm. wouldn't be as scary, because it wouldn't matter. I mean, we need to support the kids from everything they've gone through in so many different situations, but I guess it would be us meeting them where they're at and not expecting that, well, we have to get to this content. Mm-hmm. We need to put all this in them. So it's got kind of like, that's, I've kind of just been stuck on that, mm-hmm. the last couple of days.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Kristen.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we are focused about putting stuff in children. The way curriculum is set up, the way a lot of times we are instructed to be with children, that it's us stuffing it in.
And they have way better ideas than we do.
They do. So as Anna said, like asking the children that if we actually are about being child-centered, valuing the child, holding a high image of the child, then we have to actually listen to children and try out their ideas. Because they're coming back. We don't have to know it all. Like, we can move into a place where we're co-learners and asking them and trying their ideas, not just listening, but actually trying their ideas and see what works, and taking it as valuable as if, like, the superintendent or some kind of, or expert said, like, oh, this is great, but actually centering and valuing children's voices. What are you thinking, Christy? I see your thinking face.
It is my thinking face. I think a couple things. I think I notice, you know, I'm all big about the revolution. I'm all like, blow it up. And then the minute Melanie said that and reminded me of that quote, to blow it up, like maybe go, but what will it look like? And I'm like, oh my God. And so that's one. Mm-hmm. And then two, and this is a little bit of things that people are putting in the chat that maybe you want to speak to, or anybody can. You know, when I'm also a big fan of the both and, that phrase. And the way I learned it from Parker Palmer was slightly different than how I'm hearing it when I listen to you, Ijeoma. It's just even more powerful. And he's got books about paradoxes, and I talk about the paradoxes in pre-K, but just even this week, as you talked about the police officers, and to Betsy's point about, and Missy's point about your conversation, you might need to restate it for people who didn't see your webinar. Mm-hmm. That you can be, let's say, a Black police officer and still uphold oppressive systems. And so both things are true at the same time. That was such a powerful way for me to hear the both and. So I sort of am saying to myself, I can be both revolutionary and want to blow up the system and be totally freaked out by it at the same time. Mm-hmm. That was me giving myself a little bit of grace in that moment.
Yeah. Where do I want to start?
Right.
So one of the ideas around when we talk about abolitionists and we talk about policing in early childhood, that we want to remember that we're thinking about the system, that this isn't about the individual police officer, it's about the system that is corrupt and oppressive to Black, Indigenous people of color, that is harming and killing them, that is harming our children when we have police in school. To police children around their behavior. And there's been so many, because of social media, there's been so many videos and audio recordings of police abusing their power and abusing our children. Mm-hmm. And that can't stand. And so when we talk about what that relationship is going to be, that we can't just think about, oh, well, what about this individual experience or this individual police officer? Because you can have good experiences with police, but that doesn't change that the system is oppressive, that the system is corrupt, and the system has been violent.
Just go a little deeper on that. Just sorry, Jimmy, because I think it's really, people are thinking like, it was so powerful. If you guys didn't listen to the Early Childhood Investigations webinar, that might be one you want to go back to, about the dress-up clothes and about community helpers. Do you mind just contextualizing it for early childhood? Because people might say, yeah, we shouldn't have police in high schools and middle mm-hmm. schools, but you all were really talking about in preschools, how we start talking about the police and this idea of what we're perpetuating.
Mm-hmm. So we start in early childhood that we start with that, a false narrative that police are community helpers, when the reality, even the lives of young children, that isn't true. So we promote that false narrative when we have police officer uniforms. Like, I've been in classrooms that there's handcuffs and badges and special police hats. Children are arguing over who gets to wear them. And so thinking about what narrative are we sharing? Are we being honest and truthful with children? Are we actually holding the reality of children of color, Indigenous children, Black children, when we try to promote this narrative? Because it's just not true in their lives for the most part. And we have to be able to talk about that and honor that and not just have this blanket practice where, well, community helpers, you look in the Black area, there's police officers. We have police officers come to school to talk to children, to build relationships, to be part of the community. And we haven't actually had a lot of conversation about that, because we think that police-free schools has to do with K through 12, or it has to do with higher education, but it has to do with us as well. Did that get to what you were asking?
Yeah, and so anyone want to ask or comment? I know it's a little bit off of where we started, but it's a perfect example.
Yeah, but it also connects with that decolonization.
Correct.
Because part of colonization means that you're policing the people that you're oppressing, you're policing the land that you took from them. You're policing and making sure that they're actually operating in dominant cultural, in dominant cultural norms. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's why it's probably coming up more now, because mm-hmm. it's very connected to that decolonization. And that's one, looking at policing is one of the aspects. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Of how we want to change and thinking about how we discipline. Mm-hmm. So even if it's not the actual police officer the way that we think about discipline. Mm-hmm. So do we have a restorative justice model? Do we have conflict resolution? Are we just telling children what to do? Are we just finding ways to punish children? Are we just saying no? Are we not actually engaging children in the reality of living and learning? Are we teaching children how to resolve conflict without violence? Are we monitoring children? Like on the playground, are you just standing around watching for somebody to push someone or hurt someone or do something quote unquote bad? Hmm. Or are you actively engaged and not just monitoring or patrolling the play yard? Did I get us off?
Not at all. I just don't want to monopolize, so I'm just making myself pause. So please, please jump in, y'all, in the chat, or take your mute off if there's something you want to ask again or hear again or say it out loud. Sometimes just say it out loud helps me process. So if you're like that, go ahead. If you need to take a minute to journal. I heard Ijeoma say to Melanie, your heart already knows. Your heart's telling you what you need. And there's so many times that I'm realizing through this with you, Ijeoma, that my heart really does, but I have just told it to stop, or I've intellectualized it. Mm-hmm. So like I would say, you know, your job at recess is more than just standing around, da da da. It's to be engaged and embed learning opportunities and have relationships. But what I was ignoring was what my heart was really telling me is that you're just saying they're policing. Like I didn't draw that connection mm-hmm. until you just said that. But it resonates deeply with me that how much of the school day we've asked teachers to engage in policing mm-hmm. is what I'm thinking about. Yeah. Others want to process? I know a lot of you, and I know a lot of you have a lot of ideas and thoughts. This is not, this is really supposed to be open and informal. So if you have an idea or a question, feel free. We're not going to judge it.
Hi, my name is Makai Kellogg. I'm from Washington, D.C. I work primarily with 3 and 4 year olds. And since my school is all year, so we've been having staff meetings, you know, online group time, virtual group time and all that. And in the beginning of June, we took our staff meeting time to hold space and acknowledge the lives lost to police brutality and white supremacy. And one thing that came up from that was to take as collective action, we're a staff of maybe 15 to 20 teachers at the moment. And so we're creating a police curriculum where, you know, on the playground in particular, we were able to like designate, like, you know, in the classroom, dramatic play tends to be more like experiences that they've had with their families, you know, those types of experiences. And then on the playground, all of a sudden it's good guy, bad guy. I'm locking you up, you know, superhero play, like what they see on PJ Masks or whatever the show is, you know, at the moment. And so we decided to come up with like language that we've heard children express, whether it's inside the classroom or outside, and then think of possible responses to those comments, as well as the play, depending on the type of play, like, if a kid says, I'm taking you to jail, you know, things like that. Sorry, this is justice.
Wait, no, you're fine. You're just fine. Hi, Justin.
And And then also I made a box on the side for like, what are we trying to convey? Like when we say these things, like what are we really, what message are we trying to get across? Mm-hmm. And then at the bottom of the document I created, I put a self-reflective piece for the teachers. Like, what have your experiences been? You know, how does it feel when you witness this type of play and things like that also? So that was something, that's something that we're doing as a school, as collective action to address policing. And we've been participating in Black Lives Matter at School Week of Action. And thank you for that great connection, because, you know, they're the four demands. One of them being, you know, police out of schools, you know, counselors instead. And so I've been trying to grapple with, how do we address the demands, you know, in our center, right. The guiding principles, they're beautiful. They work perfectly with the curriculum. And so that's a great way of bringing that. Sorry, I'm going to mute. Yes.
Thank you, Makai. All right, Chrissy, here's one of my friends.
And she brought two.
I know.
Justin's waving to us, so we have to. We just got it. He's like, oh, I didn't know everybody was going to wave.
Yeah, so I'm thinking about what Makai was talking about, thinking about your own practice and what those connections are to, if we're going to say that Black Lives Matter, if we're going to be a part of Black Lives Matters in school, then we do have to start to find ways that is connected to our own context in early childhood. And one of those ways, yes, like realizing like, oh, it might not be happening in dramatic play. But when we think about what's happening on the playground and thinking about their play, because a lot of times you do hear children say they're chasing people down, they might be tackling each other, and then they're gonna lock them up. So what are those responses? So I'm curious, does anyone have some responses off the top of their head that might be helpful for people since we're together?
Mm-hmm. Good question.
And I'm trying to, it's hard for me to talk and read the chat. Hi. So if we're a little slow.
Go ahead, Katrina.
Hi. I think that you know, the children are only imitating some of the things that they may have witnessed, because that may be in their community. Mm-hmm. It could be from the TV. But I think one of the things we need to do is acknowledge whatever play that they're exhibiting. And then take it from there. We can't just stop it without an explanation or something from it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I'm not suggesting that we just stop children's play, because that would just be more policing.
Exactly.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, you know, we take that as, you know, as a learning opportunity or a teachable moment, as we would say, teachers, and you know, because you could be gaining some valuable information from that play experience that they're having, you know, whether it's, you know, putting that baby doll to sleep, or waking that baby doll up by swinging it by its arm, or whatever it is, you know, you're learning from that as, you know, an educator. So I think it's important that we take that information, whatever it is, and try to figure out, you know, what does it really mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's a very important. And as a classroom teacher, one of the ways that I would do that is that sometimes I would debrief the play with children. So in my early years, it was before having cameras on the phone or having digital cameras. So sometimes it would be like a week between, because I would like take pictures and then print them out, get them printed out, and then bring them back in the classroom and show the children and talk about, ask them if they remember what the story was around their play, and share some of the things that I thought, to kind of debrief and get more information about what the play was actually about. And thinking about, as someone who has children critically think about their play. So if I saw, or if I brought up like, oh, I saw you say that you're going to lock someone up and I saw you like have them sit on a step. And I'm just curious about why was that a choice? Why did they have to sit out and not play, and what happened? And you get very interesting answers. Sometimes you get the direct recall and sometimes you get a fantastic story, but all of that is good because you want to center children's voice and listen deeply to what they're saying. And so I would just document that and then we would revisit. And then if people felt like, oh, you know, that kind of play doesn't make me feel good, like I felt sad when I had to sit on the rock, or I felt sad when I was locked up, we talk about that. And we talk about, well, what can we do? Like, is that what we want when we play with our friends, to feel sad? Like, it's not pretend sad, because, you know, sometimes it's fun to pretend like you're crying and you're hurt or you're sad. But if you're really feeling sad, or if you're really hurt, what should we do about that? And I think that has been the conversations that I've been having, that I have had with children, and encourage other educators to have with children, to kind of deconstruct and find out and gather some meaning around children's play.
So I want to jump in just real quick, because this is this play is something that happened quite a bit in my program. Sorry, that's my dog in the background shaking her head. Because I worked in crisis intervention, and what's interesting is that my kiddos didn't play on the side of the police officer. My kiddos played on the other side. Mm-hmm. So my kiddos consistently were trying to evade police. They were trying to get away. They were hiding. And it happened quite a lot because unfortunate circumstances that oftentimes children had direct incidences where mom or dad or someone, police officers, came into the home in the middle of the night and would take them away. My personal experience is that I also come from that. So drive-by shootings in my house were something that happened. My stepmom had been shot a bullet ricocheted off her head. She was 9 months pregnant. And the police officers didn't come until 45 minutes later. And when they came, everyone was roped off and we couldn't go to the hospital. We couldn't check on her. We couldn't do anything. So it's like, there's also my own, and then some of the staff that I had when I was an administrator, my own response to that, right? Mm-hmm. And then children's response to how they're playing. So for us, it was twofold. And it was really trying to kind of get into our own personal triggers, our own beliefs, our own what becomes the lens to how we experience things. Mm-hmm. And I think the willingness to have those reflective conversations with children was really important for us. It was tell me more about that. And what was that like? What did that feel like for you? And because what happens is children would stay at the surface, at that surface level of play, because they're trying to work it out.
Yeah.
But we really wanted to help them kind of be reflective of the experience. Mm-hmm. And to also, for us, it was also to let them know that this is a safe place for them to do that.
Yeah.
That we're creating a safe place for them to sort of struggle through the experiences, whether that be through their verbal communication or through their own physical expressions, to work through those experiences, and that we're going to be respectful of that. Mm-hmm. That we recognize that they're not being bad or they're not being any of those things, you know, but that they're simply working through the experiences of their lives.
Right. And that could be scary to witness, because children can be very dramatic in those in that play and capturing the details. I've had a few experiences. I had one little boy that he would always be like the victim or the person that was the chaser. And one day he was like playing, all of a sudden he fell down and I saw something red like in his pocket, and I ran over because I thought he was bleeding. He actually had taken some ketchup from lunch and put it in his pocket so he could have fake blood. Oh. And I was like, oh my goodness. And my co-teacher, like, she was like really upset, like trying to figure out like what cut him or hit him. And thinking, and I was like, oh, he just had a smile on his face. And I was really confused. And he was like, oh, it's just fake blood. I saved it. I was like, that was a very smart way to use that ketchup. But maybe tell us next time, or we can find something else so we don't feel scared about the play. And so thinking about Isola, I appreciate that, because a lot of times we don't talk about that play when children aren't the heroes or aren't the police officers, that when they play out those real experiences, and it can trigger that violence. Like, I'm thinking, like, I've experienced drive-bys as a young person. I've seen police violence. And it is hard. Like, it is triggering. And we have to have a safe space for children, and also have to have a safe space for ourselves. Because, like, there's still times, like, if I hear a car backfire, like, I'm under the table. that conditioning, and thinking about how do we offer ourselves grace, and how do we continue to have that safe space and to help and have children play that we might not feel very comfortable with, but can see where that purpose and the necessity, and how do we support that play so they don't just get stuck like reliving the trauma, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So we can actually help them process. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Makai, for those questions. Sorry, I'm reading. I'm like reading from the bottom to the top. Christy, mm-hmm. Did you have something?
I was just reflecting on what both you and Isola were saying. And I think what's so interesting was, in neither of the ways that you described those stories, did you police it? I'm going to use that word sort of intentionally. So you didn't try to shape it or direct it or stop it. In both instances, it was allowing children to process it, as neuroscientists would say, to name it, to tame it. And even Ijeoma, as you finished your ketchup story, it wasn't like, well, next time, don't do that. Mm-hmm. It was like, well, next time, let me know so that I'm not scared. Like, you can still do it. Mm-hmm. You can still do it with ketchup. Like, you didn't set any rules other than your health and well-being mattered also. I don't know if y'all caught that as you listened to their stories, but even as Isola was talking about, about the kids needing to do that, how she created what we talk about, the safe harbor. She's like, this is a safe place for you to relive that, to tell me about it, to figure it out together, versus like one and done. We've heard that story before. You should be over it. Or that makes me scared, so let's not talk about it, because that stuff doesn't really happen. Mm-hmm. Kind of like when Kristen said, you know, how dare we tell the kids there are no such thing as monsters when some of them deal with them every day.
Right.
Bella? What I get a lot is what I see in classrooms is, oh, let's not talk about that. That's not a nice thing to talk about. Mm-hmm. That's not a nice thing to play. Yes. That I hear that a lot, mm-hmm. In the classrooms that I visit.
And I've also heard children say, it's not, but I like it.
Right?
I'm just reading Kristen's comment. Mm-hmm. Was there someone else?
Nicole, hello from Colorado. How are you?
Hi.
How are you? Hello. What you were saying about not policing and also just like stating what happened and letting it be what it was made me think about in the decolonizing conversation. I remember Anna saying just like she was talking about, like, we can't just buy a book and be anti-bias and anti-racist educators, mm-hmm. that we continuously have to, like, assess each situation that we're in within ourselves as educators, and in the space of the classroom. And just, like, I remember her giving an example of saying, like, I mean, even if that was a scary situation, or like, oh, I overreacted because, yes. you know, you really scared me with the ketchup, like, acknowledging that and trying to repair it, and, like, admitting within yourself is, like, it is giving up, like, some people maybe say, like, that power. And I really, like, that's something that was totally resonated with me throughout that whole conversation was, like, how do we interrogate or internalize our own power, yeah. and how does that show up as an educator, and like as far as like racism or in any way in our own bias, like how does that, our power dynamics in the classroom, especially with younger children, show up?
Yes, it's always interrogating our power, like knowing that we do hold the power as the adults. And that we also can admit our mistakes. We always can revisit with children. And children don't think less of us. Like, admitting that you've made a mistake, is that you were wrong, and try to repair it, repairs relationships. Like, it brings us closer when we can have those conversations. Because it's gaslighting children to think that, oh, adults know all the answers and adults are always right.
Yeah. Do you guys know that phrase, everyone, gaslighting? I didn't know it. So I just, it's making people think that they're crazy. This is the way I think it in my head. It's like,
yeah,
turning it around. Like, no, it's always like this. Mm-hmm. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. So it's based on an old movie. I don't know the year. But a man and a woman were married, and the husband just didn't like his wife. And so he would turn down the gas lights. It was before electricity. So he would turn them down and say, and she would like, are those dimmer? And he's like, no, it's as bright as it's always been. And like every day, like for years and months, like it went on and it kept getting dimmer and dimmer. And then she felt like she was the person that was mentally ill, when the whole time he was just lying and trying to make her believe something that wasn't true to control her.
And I feel like that's like what happens every day, all day.
Mm-hmm.
And if the gaslighting makes us feel comfortable, and I'm pointing to me as a white person, we kind of don't mind it.
Yeah.
Like, go ahead, give me some more. Assure me that it's not as bad as I might think it is.
Yeah.
And I feel like the pandemic, from my perspective, has really shown white people discomfort in ways that most of us had not ever experienced. And that's where we get the frustration of people going, aren't we done with this yet? Isn't it over yet? Can't we go back to, where's my normal? What did you say the other day? Isela has this beautiful phrase. I quote her and I put her in my book right here. I know what page you're on. Stop chasing the memory.
Yes.
And when she said stop chasing the memory, what I knew in my head was stop chasing my comfort and stop chasing it where I really did benefit from all the privileges that I have. And I'd really rather not be called out on that and have to give it up. Like, yeah, I'd really rather not. One thing's having gray roots. The other thing is having to give land back. Like, I struggle with being really, truly being an ally or a conspirator or to not uphold. Is that back to the thing that Melanie said, to really blow it up? Like, well, all the police people would lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, all the teachers, what would we do? And Ijumah always says, they can get another job. You cannot give someone their life back. And I go, right.
So it's also like decolonizing our thinking. Because I think people get scared, not only because they see like the great loss of their privilege, instead of seeing how people are being oppressed, right? They're more concerned of holding onto their privilege and power than actually having an equitable and just world where people are not being oppressed, where people are not being harmed and killed.
Because I think deep down, I don't know, I'm totally speaking for myself. I don't mean to speak upon all white people, but it's like, with the amount of injustice that we've caused, it really should flip, and then we should be, right? And what's so interesting, I don't remember who was saying it the other day, maybe it was one of the webinars, sorry, so many things, because I like to intellectualize all these things. They were like, maybe it was me and white supremacy, I don't know, I'll find it and I'll tell you, but they were like saying, hey, white people, you should be glad that what we're asking for is equity and freedom and justice and not like your head. Like she said.
Yeah, we're not asking for revenge.
Right? We're not asking for
revenge. That was her word.
Revenge, yeah. It's probably.
Yeah, because right? That's part of the decolonization, right? Because colonizing wants to get revenge and punish and police. If we're going to decolonize, we're looking for freedom and liberation, and not just for ourselves, but for everyone. So we're not seeking revenge. But because you only know a white dominant framework, you think like that's what's going to happen. That's what where the fear is.
And it's always
also,
if your life matters and mine doesn't.
Right.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, and it'll come, the salt will come back.
Somebody gave a really good, sorry, I gotta remember names, but this guy was trying to help people understand when we say, you know, the life of this student or this person or this population matters, it doesn't mean yours doesn't. He said, if you had 99 sheep or maybe you had 100 sheep, I don't know, and one got lost and you're like, let's put our energy into finding the lost sheep. Does it mean you don't care about the other 99? No, it just means they're not lost. I want to say a buffer. Like if they're not lost, like they're fine, they're good. Like, it doesn't mean I don't care about you. I just care a lot about the one that's lost. But I don't know how we get in that binary I don't know how, but you know what I mean. That was rhetorical.
And it's not like there's lots of explanations. Like people spend a lot of time graciously explaining, but the problem isn't intellectual. Like it's not that people can't understand that it's not about all lives mattering, that it's about Black lives and why that is. Yeah. Like, intellectually, I'm sure people can and will understand that.
You're generous. Like, isn't,
they have the capacity, let's say they have the capacity to understand that. But what's the problem and what the issue is that they know and they're confronting their loss of power and privilege.
Yeah.
And so when we talk about that, and those feelings, and like it's not actually real, right? We haven't gotten to the point, we're not even really close to white people losing their power and privilege. Like systematic racism is a thing and still is a thing. So like, talk to me about that tomorrow or next week or next year when we're closer to it. But right now, you have to confront what it is confronting your loss of power and privilege. But instead of focusing on that, again, focus on the oppression and the harm that's hurt and the hurt that's happening to other people. And knowing that we don't want revenge, we want liberation, and we want liberation for everyone.
Maybe what we'll do for just a second, let's all maybe just take a minute, and you might remember, and if you're just joining us or you just joined us at a different time, my question to each of you tonight was, what are you doing with this knowledge? So if you were like me and you've been taking notes, or if you're holding some stuff in your mind, let's just all take a couple of minutes, look over your notes. maybe journal a little bit. I'll watch the time for just 2 minutes and be asking yourself, what am I doing with this knowledge? If I wrote this bullet or this thought or this phrase, what am I going to do with that after this meeting tonight? And then let's come back in together and just kind of see what you'd like to do going forward. But let's just take a minute. You could drop something in the chat, but we're just going to be quiet for like 2 minutes. Just a few seconds more to get your thoughts together, think about, put something in the chat, and then we'll begin to get closure to tonight. So thank you. I'm just looking at the chat, and I appreciate your questions and your comments, and your helping me find the correct people to attribute brilliance to. So thank you, my team. Two logistical things from me, and then I will just open it up to anyone. You met Isela Garcia tonight briefly, and you met Ijuma Jordan tonight. The three of us have a new adventure that will start soon. So this is just a little public service announcement. We call it Transformative Talks for Early Childhood Educators. And so we're going to be streaming live on YouTube. We don't know how often or exactly when, but very soon, the three of us are going to gather and talk about race and equity and ability. And so just make a note, many of us follow each other, so you'll hear about it, but I wanted you to know that the three of us are on that journey. Thank you, Nicole. And then the other thing, that I've convinced Ijuma to do is she's going to conduct, for those of us who do professional development, whether it's pre-service or in-service, but any of us and any of us who want to really look at where we are upholding the white dominant culture in the actions and in the way that we deliver and facilitate and design professional development, she's going to be facilitating kind of like a deep dive. So some of you have done a deep dive with me before. It'll be much like that, but it'll be around how do we truly understand if we're a coach, a trainer, a professional development provider, a faculty member, even if we're a supervisor or director like Kristen that does staff development, you may be interested. But this is really for those of us who do PD. And so be watching for that announcement. We're going to start that up right after the Summer Leadership Institute. I'll be ready to turn my attention there. So you can put something in the chat that says, I'm interested in joining that group to talk about PD, or you can write to me anytime, but I will come back to this group and let people know when we're ready to launch that as well. But that was part of the bravery from Miss Melanie Reese in Iowa there that sparked that idea that us PD people need to have a place to talk about how our PD needs decolonized. And yeah, so those are my two public service announcements. So feel free to put other thoughts in the chat because it's getting recorded and I can share that with my colleagues. But anyone want to unmute themselves and verbally share or even ask another question that just for the record, and then maybe we'll have another gathering and unpack it. But I know some of you just were able to join us a little bit later. So, and of course, Ijuma or Isela, if you have a closing thing. I have a poem I'd like to close with tonight when we're done, but I'll just kind of open mic.
Sure. I would love to hear what people are thinking. I'm reading some of what people are, what action they're going to take.
Okay. Sometimes we say, in a word, what are you feeling? So that mm-hmm. might be an easy way is, in a word, drop in the chat what's in your heart right now. Any word that comes to your mind, and just drop it in the chat.
Reflective, inspired, grateful, accountable, open-mindedness. Self-awareness, starting to become enlightened, question the status quo, willing, inspired but overwhelmed to reflection, uncomfortable, challenged, inspired, different. Challenge, empowered,
yeah, keep them coming. If anyone needs to jump off, you, many of you know that I've renamed the leave meeting button in my mind. And when you click on leave meeting, it says, I love you, but I gotta go. So if you love us but you gotta go, you can leave the meeting, right? But if you have a moment, we'll just let people share if they have anything they want to say verbally, and then I'll read our quick poem, and that will be it for tonight. I love the paradoxes, right? That I'm both this and I'm that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, people are like, you're the same person.
Living in the present, daunted, inspired, thoughtful, anxious. Gina wrote, thinking about creating a safe, our own safe circle for people moving towards change.
Yeah, that is one thing I will highly recommend, and I'm happy to help facilitate anybody that wants to come together and talk about anything. I have several friends, some who are on the call tonight, some who are listening back, that we can talk regularly about where we see it showing up. And we call each other out on it. My friend Crystal, who I know couldn't join us tonight, when we write email copy, we read it with each other and talk about, do we think the words that we're using are upholding white dominant culture? And I know we're both two white women doing it, but it's at least us questioning each other and saying, you know, why did you choose that word? And yeah, anyway. So yeah, Gina, I'm with y'all there. Okay. Isela, anything you want to say as we close up? I don't mean to call you out, but I like to see you.
Just a participant today.
I know. Thank you for coming.
All right, Ijima, any maybe even another agreement that we could use as we go out with, to hold on to?
I'm thinking about letting go of the rite of comfort, that the learning happens in that disequilibrium place. That I'm feeling reminded of that. Because I forget, like, I'm used to talking about these things. I'm used to talking about policing, and but it can be a little jarring. But it's okay. Like, we can still learn together, people. And I'm actually feeling very inspired and hopeful, because people shared lots of really thoughtful ideas and shared what's on their minds. And I just always appreciate that when we have these conversations.
Yeah, me too. And I always appreciate you. You know that.
I appreciate you too.
Thank you. All right, here is a poem by David Wagner. It's called Lost. It says, stand still. The trees ahead and bushes beside you are not lost. Wherever you are is called here, and you must treat it as a powerful stranger, must ask permission to know it and to be known. The forest breathes. Listen, it answers. I have made this place around you. If you leave it, you may come back again, saying here. No two trees are the same to the raven. No two branches are the same to the wren. If what a tree or bush does is lost on you, you are surely lost. Stand still. The forest knows where you are. You must let it find you. Lost by David Wagner. That's
Thank
it.
Thank you, Christy.
What I got for y'all. All right. I'll share the recording. I'll share any resources. I will share links again from the things you were encouraged to read, watch, listen to ahead of time. I got your names if you're interested in joining us to examine our professional development. And then you can be watching YouTube for Transformative Talks with Isela, Ijima, and me. All right. And I thank each and every one of you revolutionaries. Thank you for making time for this important work. And reach out if there's anything we can do to support you.
Thank you.
All right.